You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Welcome, everyone. Today, you are not going to want to miss this show. We are doing a deep dive into understanding how our mental health impacts our physical health. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and both of us have been trying to explore our own mental health individually and together.
Yes, we have, and we are trying to get ourselves fired up and all of you fired up to really think about what we can do to support our mental health and support one another's mental health. And in getting prepared for tonight's show, Liza, you were motivated to share the work of Dr. Gabor Mate. I think I'm saying it right.
I think you are too, but you're asking the wrong person.
And his explanations for how we can reset our bodies from chronic stress, which is what we know comes from being a family caregiver, right? Mm-hmm. This is the difference in having to do that extra level of support that's different from the more typical roles of being parents or a sibling or a spouse and a daughter, son, right? That's how we keep trying to define what a family caregiver is. You're doing stuff that's going beyond what you would normally do in that role because the person who's your care recipient needs that extra support.
Right. And Gabor Mate is a Canadian physician and author of 5 books on trauma, addiction, and mental health. He has a background in family practice and a special interest in childhood development, trauma, and the potential lifelong impacts on physical and mental health, including autoimmune disease, cancer, ADHD, addictions, and a whole wide range of other conditions.
So Liza just turned me on to him yesterday, and I've already listened to probably about 3 hours, and I'm getting ready to order at least 2 of his books.
I know. He's amazing.
He's amazing. And I love that you described to me, because I was like, wow, this guy's all over the place. And you said, well, yeah, he's kind of like the new Brené Brown. And I'm like, oh, well, we got to get on that then, because right. We know we love our Brené. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to love our Mate.
Yeah.
I didn't even plan that one, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. In May of 2018, he was awarded the Order of Canada, which recognizes the outstanding merit or distinguished service of Canadians who make a major difference to Canada through lifelong contributions. Gabor is the talk of the town when it comes to his work on the lifelong impacts of trauma.
Yes. And we would like to play a clip of Dr. Gabor Mate that you can find on YouTube. And I would highly encourage everyone to listen to it in its entirety. The clip is from April 7th, 2023. I found it on Inside Serene Mental Fitness Channel. The Inside Serene Mental Fitness Channel interviews today's top masterminds on mental fitness. And mental fitness is really just mental fitness is having the skills to handle stress, think clearly, make good decisions, communicate effectively, and regulate one's emotions in appropriate ways. And I would argue that your mental fitness is just as important as your physical fitness. There are indisputable evidence that the mind-body connection is real, and how your mind works has direct impact on the health of your body. So, Evan, if you are ready, I'm going to have you play the first clip. And Dr. Gabor is going to be talking about the chronic stress of being a caregiver.
We're talking about caregivers, and let me tell you one little fact that, and since the book was published, which is about 10 years ago now, I think, or 9 years ago, there's been so much more evidence tending in the same direction. One bit of evidence about caregivers is that there's a structure at the end of our DNA, our chromosomes. Chromosomes is the strands where our DNA is located in our cells, in the nucleus of our cells. And these strands of chromosomes have at the end a structure called a telomere. A telomere is like the glue at the end of my shoelace to keep the strands from fraying, to keep it together. When we're born, our telomeres are a certain length. And as we get older, gradually, they shorten as we age. And until at the end of the our life, they become unraveled, at which point so do we. Now, they looked at but it's a mark of aging, in other words. Now, they looked at the telomeres of mothers looking after chronically ill children. And they found that these women in their 30s and their 40s, their telomeres were 10 years shorter than their chronological age would have predicted. In other words, the chronic stress of caregiving aged them by 10 years. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that we shouldn't care for children or for other people that require our support. But it does mean that how we give care and what kind of support we get makes a huge difference to our health.
Liza, you're the one who heard this first, and you wanted to share it with our audience. How come? What did you want them to learn?
I wanted them to learn the connection between caregiving, the stress that it may cause you, and the implications on your physical health. In my personal caregiving journey, I had a lot of health conditions out of the gate, autoimmune issues, which we'll address later. And I didn't put two and two together. You know, I'm just doing the daily grind, trying to figure out everything about autism and what I need to do for my son. And my body was deteriorating in front of me, and I didn't know why. And honestly, we're talking 20 years, and now this information, these dots are connecting, and it's starting to make sense. And I think it's really important for caregivers to know to be able to take care of their own mental and physical health.
This is true. I think what struck me was just the description of what they're actually seeing in the research. I remember having to teach the parts of a cell in psychology, so I knew what the telomere was, and I wouldn't have known that otherwise. But the fact that they're seeing that the telomeres are indicating a 10-year aging process on women that are caregiving, it aged them by 10 years. That means our cells, when we're caregivers, are breaking down faster than those of our peers who aren't caregivers. Mm-hmm. But I appreciated, because I'm always the one, you know, well, so are you, that we're always talking about how we need hope. We can't just keep sitting here talking about everything that's bad. And so I loved that he ended it with, this doesn't have to mean that we aren't going to care for these chronically ill kids, right? It just means that the caregiver has to think about and change how they give care and what kind of support the caregiver gets, because those two things are going to make a huge difference to the caregiver's health.
Exactly. And, you know, we were kind of talking about this before the show on, you know, how do we address this? Because I feel like sometimes we have to tiptoe. You know, how do we talk about the challenges that we are facing to our physical and mental health as a caregiver without sounding like a martyr? You know, that's not our goal. And I always want to be sensitive to the fact when we're talking about caregivers, because there can be care recipients listening to the show, right? And oh my goodness, I'm putting the burden on this person that is helping me out. And I don't think that is by any means what our intentions are. And I've said this before, probably last week, and I'll probably say it next week, that being a caregiver has been one of the most important, meaningful experiences of my life. I have learned so much about health and people and humanity and IEPs and Social Security. The list goes on and on and on. And if I didn't have my son, I probably would have been 20 years deep in the Desperate Housewives of Beverly Hills. You know what I mean? So the kid made me a better person. So I am not saying that caregiving is bad, awful, and we're all going to die young. What I'm saying is there are health implications to being a caregiver. They're not exposed in the public. Nobody shares this information or talks about it. And 1 in 5 Americans are family caregivers, and they should know. They should know what that means to their body.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the way that we have to make sure we address this on our show is through authenticity, vulnerability, and being solution focused. You know, I had a little time to think about that. So I was like, okay, what do I really believe? I really do believe that we have to have this conversation in an authentic way. And why would people listen to us if we're not willing to be vulnerable, and that we both want to keep focusing on solutions, right? Mm-hmm. And so if May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we really want to dig deep into mental health and the connection with the physical health, which is what Dr. Gabor Mate was addressing, I really want to put out there that I'm beginning to connect dots around the physical relationship and effects and impacts and correlations, that's the word I'm looking for, between the anxiety and depression I have and my sugar addiction. Sometimes I'm honest about it and sometimes I'm not, but I really struggle with a pretty profound sugar addiction. And I unfortunately lost a childhood friend this past week to alcoholism, anxiety, and depression. And we've had a lot of really honest conversations in our friend group. And so it really got me recognizing that I have to start seeing these things as a mental health concern, but also a physical health concern, and that it's part of a whole biopsychosocial thing, right? It's part of my predisposition genetically. I read that 50% of sugar addicts have a parent that was an alcoholic. Well, that's my truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the social part, how we think about things. And that's, I'm sorry, not the social part. That's the psychological part. So the biological part is our genes. The psychological part is the way we think throughout life. And I was like, okay, I can change the way I think. I can challenge the way I think. And that's probably one of the most important parts, because that's what I have the control over. I don't have control over my biology anymore. I have control over what I put into my body,
mm-hmm.
right? And how it reacts to things, but I can't change my genes. And my social environment. Well, my social environment has been being a caregiver. And so that's how come I think it's really important for us to talk about this and keep talking about it with our audience, because we can't change the social environment. We can't change that we're family caregivers, but how we think about being family caregivers is within our control.
Well, how we think about being family caregivers, how we act, and you know what we do to protect and take care of ourselves. When we come back, we are going to be talking about childhood trauma and how to deal with our emotions, and that our emotions could literally be killing us, and what we can do to prevent that.
Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen Voss, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Liza Hellenbrand, and we've been talking about the work of world-renowned Dr. Gabor Mate and his work on connecting childhood trauma to our current personality types, and then how that impacts how we deal with our emotions, and how we deal with our emotions actually has a direct impact on our physical health, from autoimmune diseases to cancer.
Yes, and speaking of autoimmune disease, this is something that's near and dear to my heart, because I think I have 4 autoimmune diseases listed on my medical records, everything from chronic fatigue syndrome to lupus. And the Yale School of Medicine published an article in 2020 in the Yale Medicine magazine that states the prevalence of autoimmunity is on the rise in the United States. Researchers have found a 44% increase in ANA, which is the autoantibody in lupus, in the past 25 years, with 41 million people affected.
That's intense. And it's intense that you have so many different impacts. And I think it shows that they really don't get what they're doing. Right? That they keep giving you this diagnosis, that. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, right? That's not fair to say. It just sounds like the immune system is really complex.
Mm-hmm.
So what struck me today when I was listening to Gabor Mate's talk that you shared with me on YouTube, I thought of you when he was talking about the autoimmune system, because he was explaining emotions, and that the job of emotions is to help us understand what to let in a healthy way in our life, right? In the way we're interacting with people, and what to keep out. Mm-hmm. And then he paralleled that to the immune system. And he described the immune system as the physical part of us that knows or tries to protect us from the bad things, right? The icky things, the bacteria, the whatever COVID is.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bacteria, right? No, virus, right. The bacteria, the virus, it tries to protect us from all of that. And then it also tries to keep in our good stuff, our vitamins and our minerals. And when we don't have a very good coping mechanism or structured or understood way on how to deal with our emotions, there's going to be a really strong likelihood that we're going to have some real complications with our immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah. And what I think is kind of interesting is when you have autoimmune disorder, what do they give you? They give you steroids, which is cortisol and adrenaline.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Adrenaline, yeah.
Adrenaline. And to help the inflammation and the pain.
Okay.
So one would have to ask, why are they giving you these when this is something that your body naturally makes? And the reason that they're giving them to you is because you're depleted. So one would ask, well, why am I depleted of these stress hormones? I mean, that's what they are. They're stress hormones.
And is it because, I'm asking, is it because your stress response has been so intense for so long that it's like it's sucked your stress hormones dry?
There's nothing left. There's nothing to give. So when I need them, there's none there to be had. So then that's when you get the injections.
Okay. Because the autoimmune system is trying to respond and they aren't there. So you get the inflammation and the symptoms.
Right. And yes. And the doctor then prescribes the steroids. What the doctor never asks is, what is your emotional well-being? What was your childhood like? What are your relationships like?
You know, what's your stress level? What are your stressors?
What are your stressors? None of that. You know, there's no real connection there.
Well, that's another thing that he kept saying is that in med school, he was not taught about the mind-body connection because he's from Canada and he said the Western world. And he said, you know, this isn't necessarily a diss on the Western world and it's not a competition between the West and the East, but it is pretty deeply flawed if we're only looking or only our medical experts are only being taught to look at one piece of this when we know that the mind body is so connected.
Yeah. And you know, it's when we were talking about autoimmune diseases being on the rise, but according to the CDC, 6 in 10 Americans have a chronic disease. 4 in 10 have more than one.
What?
Yeah. And the CDC lists right on their website, the lifestyle risks for chronic disease is tobacco use, alcohol use, poor diet, lack of physical exercise. Makes sense. Not a single word about stress, trauma, or effectively processing your emotions.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2023 and the CDC can't figure out how to start making the connections for us between mind and body?
Well, not only the CDC, I mean, a large portion of the medical field still doesn't make any link. When you come in, you know, they'll tell you it's genetics, it's environmental, it's, you know, it's bad luck.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah, and when we talk about our emotions causing health conditions, especially when it comes to the caregivers, I'd be curious your take on that. What exactly does that mean?
Well, what it meant to me is that I needed to really identify immediately what is the emotion that I struggle with the most. And I think I've shared on here a couple times. It's anger, right? And how does anger work? Well, there are three ways that he was outlining that we can deal with anger, right? We can be happy no matter what. In other words, suppress that anger, right? And Dr. Gabor Mate states that that has a direct link to the autoimmune disease and cancer, that they can study people who they know have identified that they stuff their anger, that they don't express it. And as a result, they tend to disproportionately have autoimmune diseases and cancer. You could be someone like me who's been labeled as having a lot of rage, and in other words, having some uncontrollable anger, which Dr. Gabor Mate states leads to heart disease and stroke. Or this is what I'm trying to work on, right, is processing our anger in a healthy way, a skill most of us were never directly taught. It's taken me well into my 40s to learn how to start dealing with anger in a healthy way. And what struck me in his description about anger being a healthy thing was he was walking up to a woman in the conference and he was getting in her bubble space and he said, "How do you feel?" And she said, "Angry." And he's like, "Right, because I'm stepping in your boundaries." Mm. Healthy anger is something that helps us protect our boundaries.
Yes. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the number one emotion that impacts us all as caregivers.
Caregiver Show. We're talking about mental health and the relationship between it and your emotions, your physical health, and being a caregiver. And what we were talking about right before the break is my realization around healthy anger. It's something that's taken me a long time to learn. I think I've shared many times that that's why Nicole's in my life. I do love being a caregiver too. And I know that the primary lesson she was here to teach me is patience. And I can tell when my patience is gone, when I feel the anger rising up in me. And so I've really had to study anger, think about anger, journal on anger. Well, I don't really journal. I fake like I'm journaling. I look at the question and I think, no, okay, this is how I would answer it, but I'm too lazy to go write that out. But anyway, what I'm beginning to really understand about healthy anger and what Dr. Mate pointed out in this talk that we keep referencing is that it's a great way to put boundaries up. And I think boundaries have become a really challenging thing for me in my caregiving relationship, but also in a lot of my other relationships. And that's because a lot of my relationships professionally and personally have me kind of taking care of people, whether it's officially a caregiver or just unofficially. Go ahead, Lise.
Oh, no, I just made me think of something that he said. When you set those boundaries to protect yourself, your social circle, it's not going to know what the heck is going on, right? So they're going to see this new person, and there's going to be some of them that are going to be like, "Kristen, it's about time you set some boundaries for yourself, girl," and they're going to respect that. And there's going to be some people that's like, "What happened to my yes lady? Why, you know, what's wrong with her?" And they're going to be out. So it's an opportunity, I guess, to see who your real friends are. But it is also challenging because some of the reasons that you don't have those boundaries is because you have these attachment issues. Yeah. So you're challenging the very thing that, you know, you're trying to.
Right. Protect. Exactly. Yeah. Do you want to talk about attachment then for a minute? Because that's an interesting connection you just made there. Right.
Well, I do. And I think we'll get to it because attachment is a big part of it, and the attachment that develops in our younger years. I mean, I'm talking from infancy on. There are studies at infancy that show how you behave and how you react.
Most definitely.
50 years later.
Do you remember what he was sharing about his attachment?
Yes, about the baby crying.
Right.
Yes. So he grew up in Budapest.
Yeah.
And the Nazis had bombed.
Well, they were coming in. He was 2 months old, and Budapest, Hungary was being invaded by the Nazis. And so he said his mom had to be under extreme amounts of stress. As 2 a month old, he doesn't remember this.
Right.
Right. We don't have a brain that's developed enough for a memory. But what he understands from all the research and studying that he's been doing is that your attachment is developing in those first, you know, couple of years with your relationship with your primary caregiver,
right,
your mother or your father. Right. She's under this huge amount of stress, war.
Right.
And so he developed an attachment style where he really made it all about keeping his mom happy and reducing her stress. And do you remember how he recognized it playing out in his adult life?
I do when he came to visit her and he had a limp and he went in and he didn't limp because right. he didn't want to disturb her, yeah. even knowing this is a woman that's been through, you know, she can handle it. She's been exactly. through it all. The thing that I found really fascinating in that is that day that they were bombed, the next day he was crying kind of nonstop. And so his mother called the doctor and said, can you come see Gabor? He just won't stop crying. And the doctor said, yes, of course I will, but I just want to let you know all of the Jewish babies are crying today.
Yeah.
And the reason is because they can feel in sense that stress, but they need mom to take care of them. They,
right.
That, you know, that's their lifeline. So what do?
Cry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That gave me chills then and it's giving me chills now.
Yes. Yeah. But what I wanted to address, I know anger is a big one for you, and I fall more under the stuff it down and people pleasing
pattern.
Yes. And on that note, he addresses that far better than I could. So, Evan, if you are up for it, can you play the next clip on people pleasing?
And this need to please everybody all the time, it'll kill you. And as for reasons I will tell you. And these reasons are not psychological. They're physiological. They have to do with the body, the immune system, and everything else. You can't separate the mind from the body. And the problem with my profession, the medical profession, is that we make two separations that are actually in life impossible to make. One is that we separate the mind from the body. We think that people's emotional lives are somehow separate from their physiology. Completely false assumption, unscientific, refuted by all the research, and yet if you go to a doctor, I mean, I know some of you here have had autoimmune illnesses, for example. So ask yourself, when you've been to the physician with your rheumatoid arthritis, your joint being inflamed, or some other rheumatic condition, did anybody ever ask you about your childhood? Anybody ever ask you about your stresses in your life? Anybody ever ask you about your marriage, about how you relate to your work, about how you look after yourself or how you don't? Likely not. Likely what they did is they said, you got this illness, we don't know why you got it, and here are the pills.
There
wow.
it is.
Yep. Yeah, there it is. He's spelling it out for us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, being a people pleaser is very in line with caregiving. It just kind of happens naturally. And so he goes on to say, where does this come from? And a lot of it comes from your childhood trauma. And I know for me personally, you know, my parents were young when they got married. They had me young. They divorced young. I know my mom was struggling as a single mom just to keep the lights on and making things work. And so I had this attachment, you know, issue. And I don't think I lived my whole life realizing that, you know, this is realizations that I'm coming to today, yesterday, you know, now, that the people pleasing is the fear of abandonment, you know,
sure.
I don't want you to leave. What can I do? How can I make you happy? Yes, I can do it. I can be better. I can try more. I promise. You know, so it's that, and it will kill you.
Yeah, it'll take a toll. I mean, mm-hmm. you're right here to describe how it's been taking a toll on your autoimmune system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering about how we help people understand the inner relationship between all this, right? So I just kind of want to spell out what's going on in my head again, right? I'm looking at how he's helping point out, and it's resonating with me, that we need to look at ourselves from a biopsychosocial standpoint. The bio being our physiology. I liked that he used that word. So that reminded me, it's not just our genes, but it's all of the like physical systems within mm-hmm. us, our nervous system. I have some friends that are really getting into looking at the vagus nerve and how whether we're regulated or not regulated, right? Our circulatory system. I know that my sister's dealing with some blood clotting issues. The digestive system. Mm. You've taught me tons about the digestive system and how stress relates to it and how it can oftentimes manifest and show us problems that are going on mentally and psychologically, right? So the physiological piece, this biological piece. And then what also is resonating with me is that it's so intertwined, as we keep saying, with the psychological piece, your emotions and your mind and your thoughts. And then the third piece is this idea that you can't take the individual out of their environment.
Right.
It's that social piece. And so all of us have a story. All of us have attachments. All of us have healthy attachments and unhealthy aspects to our attachment that are healthy and unhealthy. All of us have aspects of our environment that are challenging. And I think that's the part that I really want to talk about in terms of caregivers, right? How do we get our community, you, me, the people listening, our leaders, our employers, our family members, our extended family, our care recipients, right? How do we get everybody talking about the relationship between the caregiver and the environment they're in a way that's positive, where we're not throwing up our arms and saying, oh, this is just the lot in life, right? Like sometimes, you know, before you and I started doing this work, I oftentimes felt like, well, this is just the cards I was dealt, and just suck it up. You know, everybody's got different crosses in life to bear, would be what my Catholic mother said, right? And this would be my cross, or these are the cards that I was dealt. So again, it goes back to, I don't want to be a martyr.
Right.
I want to understand how this is playing out in my life and what I can do about it.
Yeah. And it's the really what I can do about it part, right? Because your environment, you can't necessarily change.
Exactly.
You know, the people you need to care for, the loved ones in your life that may challenge you, you can't change them necessarily or that situation. You have to change you and
right.
how you take it in and how you process it.
Yeah. What does that mean to you, Liza? Do you know? Like,
I think, you know, for me in my life, I'm living with some angry people. They function on one emotion, anger, you know? And I can't change that, and I'm not going to change them.
Right.
So what do I have to do? I have to change me and how I take it in and how I process it and what I do with that emotion. And, you know, like I shared, a fair chunk of my life, it was suppressing it. It was burying it. It was trying harder to be nicer, to make sure nobody ever gets mad. And it wasn't working in my favor. So, you know, I'm new to this game as to what my next steps are. But part of it is the healthy communication. And he went on to say that there was a study done between women that needed a biopsy on their breasts. And this group of women were all in what would be considered unhealthy relationships. And while the biopsy was being done, they asked the women some questions. And the women that were in unhealthy relationships but were able to express their emotions had a much less likely chance that their biopsy would be cancer. The women that were in unhealthy relationships and had to suppress their emotions had a 9 times higher rate of cancer.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's hopeful for me in the big picture, not for me in learning how to cope with this stuff, is that we are starting to do these studies to make those connections.
Yeah. And one thing that I wanted to mention, you know, in this whole, well, what do we do about it? That is a big part of the Powerful Tools for Caregiver course that we had offered and we're going to offer again, because it really does a deep dive in the communication end of it. Because if you don't have the skills to communicate, quite frankly, you can escalate things or make them worse.
Yes. So we both know that from personal experience, don't we? With each other with our care recipients, with the people we work with.
Learned that yesterday. So
I learned it this morning. I had to literally walk out of the house.
Right.
She wouldn't get ready. And I was like, okay, then I'm going to go sit in the car. And I was listening to this guy because I'm like, I don't have any control over her. And so for me, that's where it goes back to that part of what do we have control over? We don't have control over the environment. I don't have control over my genes. I do have control of, you know, how I treat my body. But mostly it's about how we think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how we think and how we communicate is a big part of the course, right? We talked a lot about how to be assertive rather than aggressive, which to me kind of ties into that idea of healthy anger, right? So I want to make sure that I am reminding myself and other people, anger is not bad.
No.
It's how you use the anger, how you express the anger, and what you like explain is the reasoning for your anger, right? And so that's where when he said it's to protect your boundaries, I was like, yeah, that's exactly it. I'm not angry because I think you're a bad person. I'm not angry because you should do something about this. I'm angry because I'm not letting you know how this situation is impacting me. We will be back in just a moment to talk about even more connections between our mental health and our physical health.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen Voss, and we've been talking about Dr. Gabor Mate and the work that he does connecting our emotions with our physical health. And, you know, one thing that I don't think we spent a lot of time on is that childhood trauma piece of things, and you know how that plays out. And you mentioned about your sugar addiction and your dad, and I did mine with the people pleasing,
right?
But that definitely plays a big part of how we are today. So part of it is the solution, right? So one thing that he says that we need to be is authentic.
Yes.
And when we are in these challenging situations and our attachment to others feels compromised, we tend to lose our authentic nature. And that's when we start to lose ourself. And in my caregiving journey, I think that was a big part of it for me. I felt like I was not living my life. I was a million different things, but I wasn't Liza Hellenbrand. And then at some point, I didn't even know what Liza Hellenbrand was or what that looked like or was supposed to feel like.
Sure.
And so I was thinking about it a lot last night. Like, you know, I have to be authentic and true to myself. And that's easier said than done, right? Because
I know
you need to ask yourself some big questions. What does that mean?
Well, and not only do you have to ask them, you have to give yourself some time to answer them. Like, I've been spending a lot of time since this friend passed staring out the window and just thinking, because it really hit me in a lot of different ways. I've known her since we were 12, and she's my age. She's 55. It was way too early. And it's just left me thinking about, okay, I've got only so much time left. I've made some really difficult decisions. I'm going through some transitions. But authentically, what does that mean for me? Who do I want to be on the other side of this? What do I want to be accomplishing? Where do I want to be putting my energy? And how do I want to look at my caregiving role? Right. Because there's days where I'm just like, I'm out. Like, let's just figure this out. How quickly can I get out of this role? And other days I'm like, this is the whole primary reason I'm on this planet.
Right.
I need to embrace my caregiving role. I need to put all my energy and time into it. And then I get myself close to burnout. And I faced burnout before. And that burnout was part of the caregiving, but it was not understanding how caregiving was an entire role on top of all of the other roles I have in personal relationships, and then on top of my professional role. And so I was listening to some stuff this morning about an organization that's really trying to look at professional women who are hitting burn out too quickly and they're thinking, like I did, that they have to leave the high demanding job, right? Or they have to get out of a marriage, or they have to take a leave of absence, mm-hmm. right? Or whatever, and it's not healthy. Right. And so these women were talking about how we need to take some of the ancient wisdom of what the feminine role and what women in history, right, in whatever type of cultures, whether it was indigenous, whether it was civilization and, you know, advanced civilization, whatever. But we have to take these different roles and bring some of that back into the world we're in today. Right. And so it isn't a down with the patriarchy, because, as she pointed out, that's too easy. But rather it's about figuring out authentically, who am I? Who am I as a woman? Who am I as a professional woman? Who am I as a family caregiver woman?
Right.
Those are hard questions. Do you have any answers for me yet, Liza?
Yeah, right.
Because I keep staring out the window, and all I've been noticing is the birds and the lilacs, and that's been great, but I still don't have a lot of answers, and I'm okay with that most of the time.
Well, you know what? That is great, because that is being present,
yeah.
And being present is a big part of how we address this. And,
yeah,
you
how
know,
we take care of ourselves.
You want to say mindfulness, mm-hmm. you know, it gets...
Bubble bath.
Right, it gets diluted just like the word self-care.
Yeah.
But it is necessary, and there's just so much research out there how it can reset and calm the brain
and the nervous system.
And the answer, the questions that you don't know answers to, the ones we're pondering right now, what is my authentic self mean and look like?
Right.
Be quiet. Yeah. Sit.
Yeah.
It will come.
And I want to go back to control, right? And so the thoughts are what we have some control over,
mm-hmm.
and time is what we have some control over, right? So how do I use the present? I use it by being present.
Right.
Not always jumping on Netflix, not always jumping to my device, not always reaching out to a friend and being like, hey, can we babble about this? Like, it's really, I actually told a friend or two, I'm going to dip out for a few days. Don't take it personally. I just know that I need some space. And if I don't take it, I'm going to get triggered. And I'm going to say stuff that either, you know, it's me exploding, right? Or it's going to be me breaking down. And I don't want to do either one of those things. Because what I'm recognizing is that I just need some time to myself.
Yeah. And that all stems from the awareness, right? You need to develop that awareness. You need to have, you know, get quiet and silent and curious and have those conversations about what do I need? And when they come to you, then you can express them in a vulnerable and authentic way, removing the anger. If that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I'm trying to say, without being angry, Liza, I need a drink. My authentic, vulnerable self is telling you, it's been a heavy day. It's been a heavy couple of days. We need to lighten this up a little bit. You're better with the impromptu humor. But I can tell you one thing that helps me take the edge off is a glass of wine. So
you go, girl. I've got my Nitro Starbucks here.
Exactly.
So I'll be ping ponging off the walls for hours.
Next few
but
hours.
Yeah. But before we end, I just want to give one last shout out to Badgerscape.
Yep.
A new sponsor of ours. They're located in Dane County. They do landscape design as well as yard care and maintenance. I did 22 hours of yard work last weekend.
You were crazy.
It is crazy. And then I'm thinking, what the heck? We have Badgerscape.
Like, I know.
That is 22 hours of my life gone.
Well, and you were funny yesterday because you're like, look at these bruises. Do you think there's something wrong with my circulatory system? I'm like, no, I think it's the 22 hours of landscaping you did over the weekend.
Well, you know what? There's still some to be done, and I am calling those guys because that is not anything a caregiver needs to be wasting their time on.
Nope. And so you and other caregivers, we need to ask you guys, if you want any more nominations, go to empoweredcaregivercommunity.com to put in a name of an outstanding caregiver that you think is worthy of getting a shout out on our show and a caregiver box sent to them.
We know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting, so that's why we like to end each show on this positive note.
You got this!
And together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver community. Good night, folks.
Woohoo!